This is episode number 118 of Library of the Living Dead. You are welcome here. Welcome, good librarian, to episode number 118 of Library of the Living Dead. You just heard Zombie by Steve Kane, and after these little intro comments, we'll have a letter by me. Then we get a song by Wednesday 13 called I Walked with a Zombie. And then we get Tonya Brown's Lucky Stiff, Chapter 1, Part 2. We get another song called Walk Like a Zombie by Horror Pops, and then Jake Bible's Dead Mech, Chapter 6. Get a song called Zombie by Max, and then a hilarious done-in-one by Osmosis 7 entitled Better Than Tippin' Cows. We get a song by Mr. Trout called The Zombie Song. And then Zombie Survivor gives us The Peaceful Forest. Be a few out comments, and then we'll go out with a song by the Phantom Rockers entitled Leather Zombie. So, strap it on, turn up those headphones, and let's get ready for episode number 118 of Library of the Living Dead. Hey ho, let's go! Give me some ammo for my shotgun. I ain't got no time to last very long. Oh, the lonely days are here. I've been staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. I don't care how many of those things I gotta kill. I just can't leave my home again. Oh, the lonely days are here. I've been staying home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. She wrote me a letter. Said it was a letter from the dead. People, don't forget my words, my baby's undead. Anyway, give me some paper and a pencil. I still got all those things to kill. Oh, the lonely days are here. I've been staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. Baby done wrote me a letter. My baby 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 wrote me a letter.
My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter.
My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter. It was a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. From the dead. Welcome to the Black Empties, Letters from the Dead. Dear Mom, I tried to call when your life alarm went off at our house. The lines were busy, though. Well, not busy, but they had that siren sound going on. Same with the cell phones. Now, I know you're in trouble, but I can't get out of the house. Like we talked yesterday about this Reaper virus thing and dead folks coming back to life, now I thought perhaps it was the rapture, but I don't even think God is that big of a bastard to pull off something like this. Though, since I lost my faith, perhaps I can believe he is that big of a bastard. The front and backyards are full of those dead folks. I've shot a lot of them, but others just seem to take their place. It's like they know Tam and I are in here. We've lost contact with Sarah and Rachel, too. You know both of them are at school. They say it's worse at the universities. I cry all the time about them, because I'm afraid they're lost. Now, I know you, and I know damn well sure that you're going to get in that big-ass Lincoln and try to make it out here. That's why I'm leaving this letter that'll be tacked onto the locked front door. You know where the hidden key is. I'm going to try to make it to the tracker and come to get you, just in case you haven't left. But if you do get here first, please don't look in our bedroom. Tam was bitten and turned into one of those things. She didn't bite me, but she did scratch the hell out of my face before I could put a .45 slug in her head. It's a mess in the bedroom, Mom. Don't try to clean it up like I know you will, and leave the dirty dishes alone. I'll do 'em. Now, I don't think the scratches will affect me, but I'm feeling kind of tired, and it itches something terrible. But don't worry, Mom. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Just hold on. Love, Mike.
Shocking terror beyond your imagination. Wednesday 13 in I Walked with a Zombie.
We'll be right back.
Library of the Living Dead is now proud to present Chapter 1, Part 2 of Tonya Brown's Lucky Stiff.
Jack gasped again as he eyed my rug-wrapped corpse. How does she know? Shut up, man, Mooch hissed. Just be cool. I told you. She knows stuff. Madame Sangrau might have been 100, or even 200, but the woman didn't look a day over 20. Standing almost as tall as Mooch, she was a dark chocolate fantasy wrapped in tissue-thin silk. Dreadlocks hung in raven sprays around her beautiful face, framing her high cheekbones, her dark coffee eyes, her broad crimson smile. Her breasts were fantastic, taut and tight on her supple frame. Her bust earned the name, threatening to burst from her tight blouse if she took too deep a breath. Gauzy skirts billowed around her as she moved, reminding me of a blooming flower, its teasing petals hinting at the shapely stems beneath. Chimes tinkled at her steps from bracelet upon bracelet of tiny silver bells wrapped around each ankle. "Damn, Mooch," Dave whispered. "I thought you said she was old." "Don't let that body fool you," Mooch whispered back. "She was old when I was a kid." "And she ain't getting any younger," the madam said. "Now step it up, boys." She continued her sashay through her parlor and into her dining room. As a disembodied spirit, all I could do was follow, ethereal drool flowing freely. The body from which I had been evicted was unceremoniously hauled into the madam's house, freed from its carpeted confines, and plunked onto the dining room table for inspection. The madam grunted and groaned as she scrutinized every inch of my dead body. It was the most a woman had ever touched me, and I had to die to get the attention.
"This boy been poisoned," she announced. "Overdose from the look of him."
"Damn," Dave whispered, "she's good."
"Who gave him the dope?" she asked.
Mooch and Jack, fair-weathered friends as they were, pointed straight to Dave.
"Thanks a lot, jerkwads," Dave said. "What's he been taking?" she asked.
Dave handed over the baggie, at which Madame Sangrau barked a sharp laugh.
"Huh! You boys always thinking the answer to all your problems lies in pills," she said. "You'd swallow kerosene if you thought it'd make you grow 3 inches.
I got the impression she wasn't talking about height.
"Excuse me, ma'am," Jack said, actually raising his hand for a turn to speak.
"What is it, young man?" she asked.
"Peter wasn't like that, ma'am," Jack stammered as he lowered his hand.
She narrowed his eyes at my friend, drawing close enough to make the hair on his arm stand on end when she spoke again.
"Well, then, why don't you tell old Sangrau what this Peter was like?"
So they did. She had a hard time believing them at first, looking to Mooch for confirmation. The madam also looked as though she couldn't care less, until they got to the part where I died a virgin. Her eyes went saucer-wide at the news. All at once, I was interesting. Lucky me.
"This boy never had a lover," she asked.
"Not that we know of," Mooch said. Madame Sangrau turned her attention back to my cold corpse, trailing her hand along the length of my body as she asked.
"He's not what? Maybe 19?
18, ma'am," Jack said. "Graduated high school early. He never had much time for girls. He was always really focused on school."
The madam leaned in, right up to my ear, whispering,
"18 and never been kissed."
My spirit roiled, an invisible cloud of floating indignation. I'd kissed a girl before, 3, to be exact. I'd even made it to second base on one memorable occasion. I just never seemed to be able to cross that finish line for one reason or another. But I won't bore you with the details of my pre-undead sex life, or rather, lack thereof. The madam cupped my groin, and then, I know how eerie this sounds, I swear to the heavens above, the woman looked right at me. Not at my dead body lying there, but right up at me, as though she were aware of my essence hanging over her. She lifted her eyes, looked straight at me, and said, "But Sangrau fixed that, won't she?" The guys didn't seem to hear that part, but I did. Boy, did I ever.
"Can you help us out?" Mooch asked.
The madam looked over her shoulder at him.
"Remind me again why I should."
"'Cause you owe me," Mooch said.
"Old debts means nothing to an old woman," she said. Sangreal done taught you enough to make up for taking your little cherry, didn't she?
Mooch grinned. You sure did.
I hate to break it to you, Moochie baby, but Sangreal don't do much magic in these days.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means I ain't in de raisin' business no more.
Bullshit.
No, dat de truth. People ask too many questions these days, looking for all the wrong answers. It ain't like it used to be.
True. It ain't like it used to be, Mooch said. And that's why it would be so hard for a woman like you to come by a young man like Peter. I know how much he means to you. How much power's in there. He nodded at my corpse. The madam tilted her head to stare at the ethereal me again.
Do you now? Do you know just how much?
Mooch nodded again. How often does a chance like him come knocking?
Moochie, you always had the silver tongue. Could charm de birdies right out of de trees.
He flashed her another wide smile. Come on, girl. What do you say? Once more, for old times' sake?
Old times? Sangreal snorted. Boy, you ain't old enough to have old times.
I saw enough when I was with you to give me enough old times for three men. She chuckled.
Now dat de truth.
Can you help us out? Mooch pressed. Help me out?
I do believe I can, she said, still eyeing my otherworldly form. It was high fives all around for the guys, and even I smiled a ghostly grin.
You can really bring him back to life? Jack asked.
Mooch groaned at the question.
One hand still clutching my family jewels, the madam tossed her head back, letting go a growling laugh that shuttered the windows in their sashes.
Back to life! Nah, boy, Sangreal can't bring no one back to this life. This boy ain't never gonna live again.
Then how can you help us? Dave asked, even more confused than Jack.
Guys, Mooch said, his tone shouting a warning louder than a fire siren. You really don't want to know.
Sure they do, the madam said. They want to know exactly what they done got themselves into.
Mooch heaved a sigh as he buried his face in his hands.
I told you guys not to ask questions.
Too late, the madam said. Much too late for that now.
You go on, Moochie baby. You tell them what Sangreal gonna go and do to their friend.
Jack and Dave implored Mooch with curious eyes. Even I was a little worried at this point. What in the hell had they gotten me into? Mooch sighed again, then mumbled something incomprehensible. What? Jack asked.
She's gonna make him a zombie, Mooch hollered.
The guys looked to one another, then back to Mooch. The madam laughed low again, her hand flexing over my package in the way that made me sorry I wasn't there to enjoy it.
A zombie? Jack asked.
Dave laughed a little. Man, you're apeshit. That is so damn funny. Mooch's flat expression told Dave just how funny he was trying to be. You're kidding, Dave said. Aren't you? Mooch shook his head. I told you not to ask.
This is wrong, Jack said. This is more wrong than just hiding the body. Way wrong, like heaven and hell kind of wrong.
Shut up, Jack, Dave and Mooch said in unison. Jack fell into his whimpering dance, his gaze jumping back and forth between my corpse and the strange madam.
What the hell, man? Dave said, throwing Mooch a light punch on the arm. What good is a freaking zombie going to do us?
At least he'll be up and walking, Mooch said. He looked to the madam and asked, maybe even talking? Madam Sangreal shrugged.
What good is a walking corpse, Dave asked, or a talking one, especially if he blabs on us?
Don't you get it? Mooch asked. A walking corpse means he can walk anywhere, like in front of a train, or into busy traffic, or off a bridge.
Dave got it then. He covered his mouth with the back of his hand as though the idea sickened him.
Jack's right. This is wrong.
Mooch snarled at the guys. Isn't it better than the fuzz finding him face down in a hotel bed dead off your dope?
Jack's words rushed out in a series of excited squeals.
You won't hurt him, will you?
Madame Sangreal's feral look faded as she narrowed her eyes, cocking her head at the question. Jack stood his ground, repeating the question even as the madam tried to stare him down. A thin smile crept to her lips as his wavering voice begged her not to harm my corpse.
"Ain't you a sight for sore eyes?" she said. She tipped her head to Mooch and Dave. "While these animals worry about themselves, you worry more about this dead boy. And here I thought there weren't a true friend left on this earth." Letting go of my groin, the madam clasped her hands together, gesturing in Jack's direction. "For his true friend, I promise he not suffer. May he always find pleasure in all that he does." Jack seemed satisfied by this response, his frantic shuffling giving way to a calm stillness. I was just glad that at least one of my mates was a true friend. I can't imagine where things might have gone if Jack hadn't spoken up for me. Then again, I suspect the madam made her plans the moment she laid eyes on me. She's just that kind of gal. "I'll tell you what," madam said, ushering the guys to the door. "Y'all just leave your friend with me. Sangrel knows what to do." "You'll take care of him?" Mooch asked as they reached the porch. She smiled again. "Sure, lover boy. I do what I can. Y'all not worry y'all pretty head about it no more." With that, she shut the door on them. I lingered at the entrance, wondering if I should leave with them. After a few moments, I decided I was much too curious about what the hell she was planning on doing with the rest of me. I followed her back to the parlor, where my body awaited. I caught myself hoping she'd palm me again, but all she did was pull up a chair and make herself comfortable at the feet of my corpse. And there she sat, just staring the length of my dead body, thinking God only knows what. I was just beginning to wonder if I should have followed the guys back to the hotel, when she spoke. "Well, what do you think I should do with you now?" she asked. She lifted her face again, looking right at me. "Come on, boy," she said. "I know you're here. I can feel you lingering like you just can't wait to jump back into saddle. Is that what you want? To get back here in this bag of bones and get back to your little life?" That was exactly what I wanted. I can't begin to describe how it feels to nod furiously when your head is lying several feet below you. The madam smiled, ever wider, as she said, "Well, I hate to rain on your day, but it don't happen like that. You're dead, boy. You better get used to that now. Now we can fix it so your friends don't suffer for their deed. At least not just yet." And I just hung there, unsure what she meant. "Everything catches up with us, yes?" she asked, and then laughed again. I suppose I understood in a weird sort of way. "Now, what am I going to do with a fine young man like ye?" she asked as she stood. "Been a long time since Sangrel had a virgin on her hands, especially a dead one." She ran her hands along my corpse again, pausing at my waistband a moment before she loosened my belt, that feral grin returning to her lips. "Now, I know what you're thinking, and trust me, the same thing was going through my mind, but it wasn't like that. She wasn't just some weird, kinky old freak." "Okay, so she was old, and weird, and kinky, but what she had in store for my corpse wasn't quite the horror show my flinching phantom nerves had me set for. Turns out the madam practiced an ancient art known in certain circles as tantric enchantment. And to the rest of us, that's just fancy talk for sex magic. Despite sex being right there in the title, there wasn't anything erotic in what she did. Not really. Save for shucking her undies, she didn't strip down. By some miracle, her blouse's precarious grip on her breasts held firm, so there were no bouncing lady bits to enjoy, no pornographic images to lust after. It was all very simple. The madam bathed me, sprinkled me with a few herbs, and lit a number of candles. Then she just did her thing. Mind you, her thing consisted of screaming a string of foreign words peppered with obscenities and commanding heaven and hell to bend to her will, all while she... well, you get the idea. Up to this point in my pathetic life, I had never seen a woman have an orgasm. Sure, like any red-blooded American boy, I'd fooled around with porn, but I had never seen a real live woman up close reach that final state of ecstasy. Not until the night I first saw Madame Sangrel come. It started with a low sound in her chest, an animal snarl from somewhere even deeper, more primal than her bestial laugh. The sound rolled up her throat until she was grunting and growling and groaning. She grabbed her breasts, squeezing them through her tight blouse as she worked her magic,
until her crescendos of groans changed into a series of delighted cries. Then it happened. All at once she arched away from my still form into a sweet curve of sweat and sex and flesh, and from the look of sheer pleasure on her face, I knew she was coming. Well, that and the fact that she glowed. And I don't mean metaphorically. A bright light radiated from down below, spreading throughout her body until her whole being shone like the freaking sun. The sight of it was so stunning, so gorgeous, that I couldn't look away even if I wanted to, which I didn't. So there she was, all arched and glowing and shivering and quivering, when she threw her head back and shouted, "Now, boy, get in here now!" I heard her words, but their meaning was lost in the fantastic sight of her shimmering orgasm. "Get back in here now," she shouted again. "Don't make me come get you, boy." And that snapped me to it. I dove for my naked corpse, and then all went black. I returned to the land of the living with the madam draped across me, her breathing ragged, clipped, like she had just run a marathon. To my surprise, I was still rock hard. Not to mention, still inside of her. I wiggled my hips, marveling at the sensation of being buried balls deep in the woman's puss. It felt good. It felt amazing. But most of all, it felt right. I shifted my hips, pulling out a little before I plunged her depths again. The madam lifted her head and shone that mild, wide grin down at me. "So it worked then?" she asked. "I guess so," I croaked, my throat as dry as graveyard dirt. "Good, good," she said, as she relaxed against me again, her breathing evening out. "Sangrau still got the touch." "You sound surprised." "I wasn't sure I still had it in me. Been a few years since I did this sort of thing." I pumped her puss again, eager to enjoy this intimacy for as long as she would allow me. "What's this?" she asked, wiggling her ass in return as she sat up again. "You ready for more so soon?" "Why?" I asked. "You ready to stop so soon?" I held the woman by the waist, thrusting myself into her in slow, steady rhythm. It all came so natural to me, this feeling, these actions, like I had waited my whole life just to please her. The madam responded with the sweetest sound I had ever heard, a light, feminine moan. It was different from the over-the-top groans the women in porn make, or the business-like grunting the madam herself has spouted earlier. This was a gentle, soft sound, as if she were enjoying herself, which I hope she was. Anxious for the full-on sexual experience, I dared to take it a step further. I reached up to unbutton her blouse. She didn't stop me. Her breast tumbled free, sans bra, right into my waiting mouth. I sucked and lipped at each nipple, like a newborn in his first feast. And all the while, I kept impaling her on my undaunted steel. "Been a while since Sangrau did this either," she said. "Been never for me," I said between licks. "Boy," she groaned, "you got some nerve taking liberties with an old woman. Didn't your mama teach you better?" I didn't know whether it was dying or coming back or losing my virginity at long last, but I felt large and in fucking charge. I looked right up to her, saying, "If you don't like being fucked by a dead man, then feel free to stop." "You kiss your mama with that mouth." "Sure," I said, "but I don't fuck her with this cock." I picked up the pace, bouncing her on my prick in quick bursts. "That's just for you." "Is it now?" she asked. I nodded. "Yes, ma'am. I'm yours for as long as I can last." Her laughter sent little jolts of pleasure all along my member. "You think you done found the Holy Grail, huh? Boy, you have no idea what you found. All stiffed up and no way to finish." I don't understand." I slowed my pace, unsure if she was asking me to stop. She lowered her lips to my ear to whisper, "You can't climax, child." I understood. I didn't like it. But I understood. "I can't come?" Sitting up again, she laughed. "Nah, boy, you still dead as a can of ham. No blood flow,
no ejaculate, no cum. But thanks to my mojo, you'll stay stiff as a board, but you'll never get the pleasure of the orgasm. And dem's the breaks when you's undead. I'm sorry, son. But her grin suggested she was anything but sorry. After a moment's pause, I grinned back and resumed pummeling her. Wrapping her arms about my shoulders, she hung on as best she could, her breast bobbing in my face, begging to be touched. "Whoa, boy, didn't you hear me?" I grunted in assent as I tongued her nipples. "Then what's all the fuss about?" she asked, her question punctuated by squeals of pleasure. "I can't come," I said between thrusts, "but you can. And if I have my way, you're going to come every minute of every hour of every day for the rest of your life." I emphasized each every with the thrust of my cock into her puss. "You crazy kid." The madam tried to dismount, but I held her firm in place, forcing her to ride me. "No, I'm just making up for lost time." She stared at me with wide eyes, her impish grin melting into a look of outright confusion. "What's come over you?" "You did," I said. She tried to roll off me again. "You don't know what you're saying." I pulled her back onto me in a rough jerk. Cupping her face in my hands, I forced her to look me dead in the eye, every pun intended. "Your orgasm was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen," I said, still rolling my hips against her. "I always thought sex was a waste of time, a waste of energy. I always thought it was a race to see who could get their rocks off first. And why worry about complicating things with a partner when I could do that on my own? But I was wrong. I didn't know how beautiful it could be. I wasted my whole life on books and facts and figures when such a gorgeous thing was right there waiting to be." And I paused to squeeze one of her breasts for emphasis as I finished with grabbed. She searched my face for the hidden meaning in my words. She couldn't find one, because there wasn't one. "You're crazy. You know that." "Why am I crazy?" I asked. "Because I want to satisfy you? Because I want to make you climax over and over just so I can bask in the glory of it? Then yes, I'm crazy. It doesn't matter if I can't come as long as I can be a part of it when you do. Please, let me make you come again." She had thought about it for a moment, then bucked against me, letting out a guttural sound I would come to know well. "Crazy me harder, boy. Sangrel ain't got all night." And as they say, her wish was my command.
Thank you. You're listening to Jake Bible's Dead Mech, the world's first drabble novel, written and performed by Jake Bible. This story is available only as a podcast novel and is not for the faint of heart. If you can't stand blood, gore, graphic violence, foul language, cannibalism, zombie hordes, or sexual situations, well then, you aren't invited to this party. For more details and info, go to jakebible.com. Feel free to leave your mark there. It's only fair. Episode 6, Chapter 3, Part 1. Alarm sounded in the salvage mech's cockpit. Jay tapped his comm. Masters! Yeah, got it. Something's on the other side of that second ridge due east. Jay glanced at the rookie and smiled. Want to take a scouting break? The rookie looked around. Out here? Gotta learn sometime, rookie, Jay said. Sure. Great, Masters laughed. This'll be fun. Park over by the first ridge. Shouldn't take long to hike up and get a good view, Masters said. Hike? The rookie asked. Yes, hike. What, did you think we were just going to drive over and say hi? Masters laughed again. The heat was unbearable. The climate processors must have finally gone, June thought. I ain't gonna last long out in this shit. She flicked the thermosensors on, scanning her surroundings. There, 10 clicks out, was a cool patch. She zoomed the scanners in and saw the mouth of what she hoped was a deep ravine. I can hold up in there until night, wait for things to cool down. She knew the dangers of traveling at night with limited capabilities. It would be very difficult to pick out the swarms of zombies against the rapidly cooling rocks and earth. Masters hopped from his mech's ladder and strode towards Jay and the rookie. Jay handed the rookie a small backpack. Strap that on. Anything happens in that pack will keep you alive for at least a couple of days. The rookie started to open the pack. Leave it be, rookie. It takes forever to get it all back in there, Masters said, taking a second pack from Jay. What's in it? Life, kid. Your tablet has a full inventory. Shall we? Jay said, motioning to the ridge they needed to crest. We only have a few more hours of daylight. June glanced back and forth from her control panel to the ravine, watching as her mech's systems started to shut down, and hoped it would hold together long enough to get her to cover. She didn't want to end up exposed out in the waste, not that holed up in a ravine was any more secure. Buzzers sounded, and a loud clanging, clanging crunch signaled the end of the ride. Her mech ground to a halt about 200 yards from the ravine. Shit, June muttered. She shut down power, grabbed her gear, and unlatched the cockpit. The sun blazed. I know you can fight and all, but I have to question why Caprizi sent you with us, Masters said, handing the rookie an auto carbine and 2 clips. I don't even know if you're trained to use one of these. The rookie pocketed the extra clips, popped the one out of the carbine, cleared the chamber, and slammed the clip back in. Not an issue. The rookie slung his carbine, following Jay and Masters up the ridge. We really are a slapdash bunch of yahoos, Jay laughed. Good thing we're all crazy as fuck, otherwise we'd be dead by now. Sweat pouring off of her, June collapsed into the shade of the overhang that was the mouth of the ravine. She risked a shallow drink from her canteen, hoping the ravine still held the water that had cut it out of the rock. She brought her knees to her chest and rested her forehead against them, trying to fight the sobs. Despite her military training, years of mech experience in the waste, and the untold thousands of undead she had obliterated, she could never control the tears. She gave up and rolled onto her side, letting the emotions take over. So why are we watching a deader instead of killing it? The rookie asked. Pay attention, Masters replied. The rookie focused his binocs on the dead mech in the valley below. The thing was scorched and scarred, lumbering from wreckage pile to wreckage pile, kicking at the debris. A mass of zombies followed. The rookie stopped, noticing the dead mech's legs. Is that paint? Nope. One of the zombies came too close, enraging the machine. It stomped on the creature, then turned on the others, quickly pulverizing them under its massive feet. That's Red Legs. He hates everything. Bisbee checked his sensors and fumed. Nothing. Not a goddamn thing anywhere. Jethro! Yeah, Biz? Jethro answered over the comm. What you got? Jack shit. You? Jethro checked Minimech's 2 and 4's vid screens. All were void of any movement or sign of dead mech activity. Nope. I should be out with Matthew looking for June, not on some wild debtor chase. I don't disagree, Biz, but the doc thinks, and Caprizi agrees, that we need to know what's up with the debtors more than we need to find an AWOL mech pilot that's lost her shit. Yeah, I know. You have names for them? The rookie asked in disbelief. But don't we kill them when we see them? Why bother with names? Masters gave Jay and the rookie a look of angry sorrow. That's the plan, kid, but it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes they kill us, and all we have is vid clips of the battle. That's how most of these have been named, Masters answered bitterly. Most of them? Asked the rookie, catching the disclaimer. Jay cleared his throat. There are a couple we've met, battled, and... And? And we were lucky to get away. The dead mech, Shiner. He named himself Shiner. He didn't know why, but it was his name. Sat in the shadow of the mesa, tucked between rock outcroppings, and finished tinkering with one. He set the mini-mech down and powered it up. Nothing. If the dead mech could have frowned, it would have. He lifted the mini-mech up and turned it over in his hands, puzzled. He tinkered some more. Setting one down, Shiner tried again. Still nothing. Rage started to build, and Shiner had to use all of his self-control not to smash the mini-mech to tiny bits. Matthew had tried to follow the massive footprints left by June's mech, but the wasteland was already reclaiming them, the wind whipping about and the sand flowing back to its original unmarred state. Damn it! He pushed his sensors to full power and scanned the horizon, but as he expected, nothing showed up. She had too much of a lead and had been zigzagging so much, deliberately making it hard to follow her, that Matthew couldn't even guess which direction she may have gone. He sighed and pushed on, planning on covering as much ground as possible before returning by sundown. Shiner wasn't sure how to process frustration, and the raging hunger from the zombie pilot strapped into his cockpit wasn't helping. Shiner fired a plasma blast into the side of the mesa, showering the area with rock and debris. The act of violence focused him, and his frustration and anger subsided. It also made him acutely aware he could have just alerted any mech in the area, living or dead, to his presence. He set all sensors to full and scanned the area. At the far edge of his readings, a mech stomped through the wasteland. Curious, he continued scanning. So what's the plan? The rookie asked as the three descended from the ridge. The plan? Jay asked. To go after the debtor, after Red Legs. Masters laughed. Kid, our only plan is to get to Foggy Bottom and avoid debtors at all costs. Jay stopped and turned on the rookie. We have a whole base relying on us coming back supplied. Combat can wait. I just thought, how long do you think we can last in the waste without med supplies? It can be done, the rookie grumbled, pushing on. Jay and Masters shared a puzzled look and followed. Shiner noted the heading of the mech as it moved out of range of his sensors. With renewed determination, he lifted one again and went back over his modifications. Nothing seemed out of order, and he couldn't figure out why the mini-mech wouldn't activate. Frustration returning, Shiner lashed out, smacking one brutally and sending the mini-mech skidding across the dirt. Instantly, one buzzed to life, righted itself and approached Shiner, waiting for its commands. Shiner opened his cockpit and withdrew a cable, plugging it into one. In milliseconds, trillions of bits of information transferred from one mech to the other. June pulled herself together and stood up, brushing sand and dirt from her uniform. She hefted her pack and carbine, checking and securing each strap, readying herself for the climb down into the ravine. "Nothing like a good cry," she said, her words echoing off the ravine's walls as she descended. She hoped to find a perch or nook, not liking the idea of being trapped down at the bottom if she needed to make a quick escape. The weight of the pack bit into her shoulders, but she ignored the pain, paying close attention to her footing and handholds. "Hey, Biz," Masters called over the comm, pushing the system to its limits. "Yeah, what's up?" Bisbee answered. "I got Red Legs for you if you want it." "Shoot me the coordinates." The comm crackled and hissed from the distance between the mechs. "Done. Oh, and, what?" "Be careful," Redlegs is a tough one, and if it's changed like one arm, you'll need backup. Don't worry about me. Now that I know what I'm fighting, ain't nothing going to stop me. Master was silent for a moment. Okay, good luck. Thanks. Bisbee turned his mech towards Masters' coordinates. 1 obeyed. It had been told what to do, where to go, and it was doing just that. Stay out of sight, so it hid. Stay off sensors, so it did. Follow, observe, report. Follow, observe, report. These were its commands. These were its reasons for existing, for being allowed to exist. It observed and reported back about the live mech it was following. One knew this mech. It had visual memory of this mech, of it being repaired, it being deployed, and it returning. But returning to and from where? That was old programming. That was wiped. One obeyed. Pilot Jespers to base. Pilot Jespers to base. Hey, assholes, anyone manning the comm? Matthew yelled. Fucking chill, Maddie, Jethro barked back. Since your girlfriend is busy plotting our deaths in the kitchen, I'm having to monitor you, Bisbee, and 2 and 4, so fuck off. Sorry, man. Listen, I'm lost out here. Your instruments aren't working? No, dumbass. I mean, I have no idea which way June could have gone. The trail is cold, and I'm searching blind. If you weren't blind, wouldn't it just be called following? I fucking hate you sometimes, Matthew growled. Fuck you too, Jespers. June splashed the cold water onto her face, lifting her head and letting it drip down her neck. She breathed deeply and started to relax a bit. She sat on the bank of the small stream that cut the narrow ravine and wondered what her next move was. Whatever it was, she knew it wasn't sitting on her ass out in the waste. She dipped her canteen into the water until it stopped bubbling, then plopped 2 purification tablets into the canteen. As she replaced the canteen, something in the water caught her eye. She leaned in close, then gagged. Pilot Caprizi, report to your station immediately, his commanding officer screamed over the comm. I can't, sir, Caprizi responded. I have to get home to my family. Caprizi, you are risking court-martial for this. Possibly execution for desertion. Do you understand? Yes, sir, but my wife and daughter are more important, sir. I am sorry. Caprizi, I will send the entire UDC His commander's voice was interrupted by the sound of wrenching metal, shattering glass, and a massive explosion. Then the comm went dead. Commander Caprizi came awake, face down on his desk, his cheek wet with drool. Bisbee's sensors picked up movement. All right, now we're talking, he mumbled, readying weapons as he adjusted his course to intercept. Within seconds, he had solid readings, and disappointment washed over him. His sensors told him he was following a transport of some kind, highly modified and in pursuit of approximately 50 zombies. Ranchers. Bisbee wanted a look. He halted his mech, grabbed his binocs and carbine, and just a short hike up a small hill, he had a perfect view, which was more than the transport had, since it seemed completely unaware of the dead mech coming up on it. Oh, God! June placed a hand over her mouth to keep from puking. Staring up at her, just below the surface of the water, was a severed head, and surrounding the head were other heads, and arms, legs, torsos. Oopsie, a voice said behind June. Looks like someone found the larder. And what's a pretty thing like you doing way out here? June spun around and faced a shaggy, dirty man in tattered clothes and boots. She didn't focus too long on his appearance as the click of his switchblade commanded her attention. She glanced at her carbine. Try it, bitch. Bisbee to base. Yeah, go ahead, Biz, Jethro responded. Get Rachel on the comm for me. Will do. A brief moment later, Rachel's voice crackled. What you find, Biz? Looks like I've found a debtor. The thing's about to take out a rancher herding transport. Can you stop it? Not in time, no. Sucks for them. What do you need from me? The debtor is Redlegs. There was a brief silence. You still there, Rach? Yeah, Rachel puffed. Sorry, I'm heading to the hangar now. I'll be geared up and on my way in 5. I ain't waiting. I know. Commander Caprizi shook his head back and forth, trying to bring himself fully awake. He stretched and yawned. "Damn, I'm getting too fucking old for these late nights," he said aloud in his empty office. "I'm also talking to myself too much." He laughed at himself, then frowned, the soldier in him seriously considering his stability. "I need coffee." Caprizi stood and strode from his office, headed to the mess hall. "I'll check on baby girl and make sure she hasn't burned the kitchen down," he thought, rubbing at the crick in his neck the impromptu nap had given him. 1. Obeyed. Follow, observe, and report. 1. Didn't understand this mech it knew, the living one. Why was it going towards the danger? The other mech, the dead one, was a crazy mech. Not like one's... what? It searched its limited memory but couldn't find a term, or didn't understand the term. The mech one knew was going to be in trouble. Even the newly born, created, altered, reprogrammed mini-mech could see that. One needed to get closer, but that would risk detection. That could mean disobeying, which couldn't happen. Follow, observe, report. One jammed all frequencies and sensors. One obeyed. Caprizi was grateful that when he entered the mess, he didn't hear his daughter cursing the world. He took that as a good sign. His happiness soon abated when he noticed that not only was there a lack of cursing, there was a lack of any noise. He stepped behind the mess line and back into the kitchen proper. It looked like a tornado had hit the place, which was what he expected. What he didn't expect was his daughter to be missing. "Rachel? What's your location?" Caprizi asked over the comm. "Can't talk, Papa Bear. Duty calls," Rachel responded. "Hey, Jethro," Matthew called. "What the fuck? Am I the base receptionist? You want me to check your calendar to see what dinner you have planned tonight, too?" I don't even know how to respond to that," Matthew said. "Sorry. Looks like Bisbee is about to get in the shit and Rachel's heading out to back him up. I've got 2 mini-mechs in the waist I need to get turned around and headed back to base. So what do you need?" "Just letting you know I'm calling it for the day and coming home." "Great, I'll pass that on." The switchblade slashed before June could even register the movement. She took a gash to her forearm and another to her right thigh. Stumbling backwards, trying to get away from the madman, she didn't hear the second come up behind her until he had her about the throat, immobilized. The first attacker closed in, cutting at her uniform. "Hold on," the second said. "We could use that fancy gear." The first smiled, carefully unlatching the equipment straps. Once they hit the ground, though, he began slicing her uniform off. The second leaned close, licking June's cheek. The commander entered the hangar too late. Rachel was already past the bay doors and engaging her motor drive. "Damn it, baby girl! Where the hell are you going?" Caprizi demanded to know. "Bisbee is about to engage Red Legs and isn't waiting for my ass," Rachel responded over her comm. "What's gotten into you? This is standard backup procedure." "I know, but you're supposed to keep the base commander informed." "Hey, I swung by your office, but you were busy. I figured you needed your snoring and drooling time." "You saw that?" "Yep." Caprizi chuckled. "Okay, be careful out there." Metal began to protest, rivets popping from the hole as the dead mech ripped the rancher's mangled transport apart. The following undead, unfortunate enough to be too close to the carnage, were shredded and decapitated from the flying debris. The dead mech lifted the driver's limp form, ripping it limb from limb, depositing scraps into its own cockpit maw. The zombie pilot fed ravenously, while overflowing bits and pieces fell to the undead below. Bisbee lowered his binocs, stunned. "They're learning to follow the dead mechs," he thought. "Hunting in packs now, with the dead mechs as their alphas." "Jesus, Riley! You ever see a body like that on a breeder?" the dirty greaseball called Chunks exclaimed. Riley stood over June's naked, bound form. He'd just finished gagging her to keep her quiet and to keep her teeth from getting a hold of him. "No, Chunks, can't say as I have," Riley sneered, kneeling next to June, cupping an exposed breast. "She must belong to her leader to be this well-fed and healthy. Is that it, bitch? You the big man's breeder?" June glared. Riley reached between her legs. He smiled. "Oh,
That'll be nice. Boss'll like you.
Shiner returned to the coolness of the Mesa's shadows and waited for One's reports. He curiously observed a new data path being created within his system and followed it, tapping into his database and also the remaining memory pathways of the zombie pilot. Anticipation was the word his searching brought forth. Shiner was unsure how to process this new awareness, and that brought back the frustration. He smashed his fist into the ground, creating an ATV-sized crater. The outburst alerted him to a second new data path. The new search result troubled Shiner even more. The word was loneliness. Bisbee fired up weapon systems and readied his mech for battle. "I don't fucking care how mean you are," he growled aloud. "You're fucking dead." He decided to flank Redlegs, hoping to take it completely off guard. As Bisbee came around the small hill, he found himself in the ruins of some long-ago settlement or resort. Half-buried cars and transports, concrete and framing protruded from the sand and dirt. And Redlegs stood in the middle of it. The thing reached down and lifted a massive iron girder with one of its own massive hands. Bisbee charged.
You have been listening to Jake Bible's Dead Mech, the world's first drabble novel. The preceding episode was recorded and produced by the author. The intro music was Miles and Miles by Laika Kress. Outro music is Destroy by The Eternal. Both tracks available at podsafeaudio.com. Title graphic by Ed Delaney. Find him at peculiarcomics.com. This recording is protected by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works United States 3.0 license. You can share it, copy it, and give it to anyone you want. Just don't edit it, change it, or try to make any money off it without direct permission from the author. Thank you for listening.
My head is spinning.
Time is running out.
Hundreds of years after the zombie apocalypse decimates the world, human civilization has put itself back together again. Their secret weapon against the zombie hordes? The mechs. Massive robotic battle machines. But what happens when a mech pilot dies in his mech and becomes a zombie? Hell on Earth is unleashed. Prepare for a high-action, fast-paced hell ride through a futuristic wasteland as Mech Base Commander James Caprizi and his crew of mech pilots battle zombies, cannibals, religious cults, and worst of all, the dead mechs, all to try and save the human race one last time. Jake Bible's Dead Mech, the world's first drabble novel, is coming fall 2010 from Library of the Living Dead Press. Go to jakebible.com or libraryoftheliving.lafora.com. for more information and for updates on the release date. Dead Mech. The future may not be completely dead, but it's on its way.
first things about zombies is, and I mean real-ass zombies, they're fast. Those bastards is fast as sheep. I remember how all us dumb kids used to just sit around and argue about it after watching the newest zombie flick. All that was just silly sheep. What constituted a real zombie? Well, hell, I don't even give a damn anymore. Any bastard that comes running to bite me, live or dead, that's a real-ass zombie. Oh, and I know the whole bullshit that they must have died first and been reanimated, and let me tell you, some crazy sumbitch comes chasing after you, you ain't gonna give two craps whether they've been reanimated or not. Case closed on that mystery, Sherlock. Besides, they do reanimate anyways, so they're legal zombies. It doesn't take all sorts of hours like you might have thought either. These friggin' bastards are back up and ready for some meat in a matter of a handful of minutes. How do I know? 'Cause I done seen it. This poor bastard I was hanging with got blindsided by one of them zombies. Damn near ripped his arm off. I think the only thing that kept that son of a bitch attached at all was the stitching of his jacket. Then this bloke, Jerry, I think his name was. Only I don't remember so well. He falls down dead to the ground. I would have decapitated him right then and there if it weren't for that bastard zombie that took him out in the first place. Zed. That's the name I gave that there zombie. Done chased me down the road and almost got me, too. Hell, if I'd have downed 3 or 4 more beers that night before, he might have even got me, too. Zed was a fast zombie fucker. So, there I was, running down I-45, still sobering up from the drunk night before, and the Zed zombie on my ass. And would you believe it? I was still in my underwears. Lucky for me, it weren't any of them fandangled ones either that looked like a pair of shorts. These were the good old Made in the USA whitey-tighties. Amen, hallelujah, and more power to you. The good thing about underwear like that is, they don't twist your nuts up when you're running. If you got your nuts all rolled up while running from a zombie, you're just likely either to lose your sack or lose your wind. Either way, you're done out a pair of nuts, and Zed the zombie done going and chowed down on your guts for dinner. Still, I weren't even sure how I was going to lose that zombie Zed. And if I couldn't have lost him, I had no clue how I was going to kill him. But would you believe it, as luck would have it, I didn't need to worry about killing him at all. Although it would have been pretty cool to say that line like I done here in the movies. Zed the zombie is dead. Just like that, you see. Not sure sheet, and I shit you not, that dumb bastard done fell down a manhole. Who knows who done lifted that lid, but I's thankful for it. How I managed to get o'er it without messing my own britches is a goddamn miracle of sorts. Baby Jesus done blessed my ass and let me pass. As poor old Zed fell to his demise, I only suspected he died, and I don't know for sure. I mean, he shot down there, banged his head up pretty good, and fell into the darkness below. I didn't hear no splash or splat or anything, so it must have been a good few yards or such. Anyways, it was about time I checked on what's-his-name. But by the time I got back to him, he done reanimated already. Bastard starts off running for me, and I ain't barely caught my breath from the last one. So I guts me an idea. I run that sumbitch down the street and o'er that damn manhole. Jerry done hits it all half-legged and knocks his noggin good. His one leg gets sort of half-stuck out there, so I had to kick that bastard down the hole with him chomping at me all the time. In the end, though, one less zombie to worry about. I spent about 2 hours that day running zombies o'er that damn hole. Was the funniest damn thing I'd come across in weeks. Must have killed me as I'm thinking they're done dead. Maybe about 8 or 9 of the bastards. Oh, and the one that weren't no zombie either? That dumb bastard just wanted a ride in his car, and he had an itching to chase me off, so down he went too. Nowadays, whenever I get down in the dumper about this dang zombie apocalypse, I just finds me a manhole. Dropping zombies down, it seems to bring a smile to my backwoods ass.
Hey, says she's alive, but my mind and soul green like the color of a sea of bells, squirming like a fish with no air in its gills. I swim against the waves for the daily grind, just so I can imagine my surprise when it was you.
Chilly autumn morning, and Rabbit made his daily walk at the edge of the forest. He always enjoyed these mornings. The sun warmed his old aching body, and the smoke of his pipe always curled pleasantly around his long ears. When he wanted to cross the old log over the river, like he always did, he suddenly heard Mouse screaming, "No, Rabbit! Don't go! Please don't go!" Rabbit turned around, puzzled by the strange behavior of his small friend. "Why not?" he asked, and he crouched beside the shivering Mouse. "The humans! They're very close!" Rabbit laughed softly. "So? That's not so bad. We're always too fast and too small for them." "Not this time," Mouse replied, and his eyes widened as if he remembered something gruesome. "I saw some of them eating fox." "Fox?" Rabbit almost screamed, and his pipe fell out of his mouth. "It's true," another voice said. "There's something fishy going on here. I see black columns of smoke rising in the distance." It was Crow. He was resting on a thick branch of the old oak tree right above Rabbit and Mouse. Rabbit squinted at Crow whilst he crouched down to retrieve his pipe. He brushed the leaves and mud off the pipe and put it in his old coat. "What do you mean, Crow?" Rabbit asked, still puzzled by all this. Crow stretched his wings, gracefully flew down from the tree, and landed beside Mouse. One of his wings rested on the tiny shoulders of the Mouse. "The humans are making a lot of noise," Crow finally continued. "I've never seen them making such a mess. Their homes are wrecked, and their moving metal boxes are on fire." "Why?" Rabbit asked. "They're mad. I always knew that they'd kill each other some day. They're so unnatural. It was only a matter of time before they would... Mouse whispered before he broke down in tears. "But how are they mad?" Rabbit asked, and he looked worried at the area where the humans lived in the caves in the high mountains. "They're eating each other, and every animal they get their hands on," Crow said grimly, and patted the sobbing mouse on his back. "Don't they have enough food or something?" Rabbit thought aloud. "That's not all," Mouse said softly. "They look like they're dead." "Dead?" Rabbit replied. As if on cue, a loud moan came from the bushes over the small river. Rabbit turned around and saw a human, a male, staggering out of the bushes. His eyes were white, his clothes were soaked with crimson red. His right arm was ripped off, and his stomach was gashed open. Mouse screamed loudly and ran. Crow flew away immediately after. Rabbit was petrified. His old rational mind could not comprehend what was going on. What he saw was defying nature. What he saw was impossible. More humans appeared, each one more gruesome than the other. Suddenly, Rabbit felt cold fingers grabbing him. With a gasp, he was lifted off the ground by a young human, a little girl. Her clothes were soaked and caked with mud, her hair tangled and stuck to her forehead, her eyes plucked out. As Rabbit stared at the empty eye sockets of the little girl, he felt another hand grabbing him, the first of the dead humans he saw. They both tugged at him. Rabbit tried to get his matches, but he found himself unable to move. "Curse my old bones," he said as tears rolled down his cheeks. Suddenly, one of the humans tugged harder, tearing defenseless Rabbit in two. Blood sprayed everywhere, and Rabbit intestines now decorated the dress of the little human girl. Before he died, he thought about the happy moments he had living in the peaceful forest with all of his friends. The little girl opened her mouth and bit Rabbit's head off as a remaining torso. The dead humans wandered further in the forest, grabbing more animals. A few months later, the surviving animals found an old pipe lying near the old log by the river. Suddenly realizing it belonged to Rabbit, they made a small monument out of it. Now, every year, on the first autumn morning, the animals of the peaceful forest hold a memorial service to pay respect to Rabbit and all the other animals that gave their lives, protecting the forest from the clutches of the dead humans.
And that's it, good librarians, for episode number 118 of Library of the Living Dead. Stay tuned next time for a new chapter by Tanya Brown of Lucky Stiff, chapter 7 of Dead Mech by Jake Bible, a new letter from the dead, a lot of done and ones, and plenty of songs for you to jam to. So, like we always do, let's go out with a song. We'll be right back.
enclosed between the covers of Zombonauts are 30 stories about zombies in space. That's right. We've combined the zombie genre with the science fiction genre and came up with the zombie science fiction genre. Well, something like that. Library of the Living Dead Press is proud to present these unique, different, and downright weird tales of zombies in outer space. The countdown begins now. In space, no one can hear you groan.